Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Visit wholefoodsmarket.com or download the Whole Foods Market app to learn more and find the store nearest to you.
Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. We are a member-supported nonprofit food radio station. That means that every single thing we do, from broadcasting 35 weekly shows for free, to bringing you exclusive content from sold-out food events across the country, to offering scholarships to high school students, is only possible thanks to the support of our loyal members. And we want you to join the club. Become a member during our 2017 summer drive to get access to sweet swag and pledge your support to the world's only food radio station. Visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become a member now.
Welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes deeper understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from our studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli and supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi, ramen, izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, so I'll try to demystify it in this program with my good guests. And my guest today is Megumi Sasaki, who is a filmmaker and the director of the award-winning Herb and Dorothy, and the new movie, A Whale of a Tale, which received official selection of the Busan International Film Festival and to be released to the public this fall. Whale hunting is a deeply controversial and sensitive issue, especially after the movie The Cove came out in 2009. But Megumi bravely and effectively faced the issue again in A Whale of a Tale and showing both sides of the arguments. So today, we'll discuss the core issues of whale hunting in the context of animal rights, history, and the food culture of the local community. But quickly before we start, Japan Eats is available on Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes and Stitcher's podcasts. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher and subscribe to Japan Eats. And please write a review. We appreciate your feedback. Also, if you have any ideas about topics of the show or show guests, please let us know. You can email us at japanneeds@heritageradionetwork.org or kikokatema.com. Now, let's start a conversation with Megumi Sasaki. Hello, Megumi. Welcome to Japan Eats.
Hello.
So, first of all, you're from Japan. And where did you grow up in Japan?
I was born and raised in Sapporo, okay. Hokkaido. You know, now famous for beer, I guess.
Okay.
Other than the Olympic Games.
Right. So so then I heard that you never went to film school, but you have a lot of interesting experience in the media in the past. So what kind of experience you had?
Well, I did a lot of things from writer for freelance writer for Japanese newspapers and magazines and also photographer. Mm. At one point, I wanted to be a wall photographer, so I traveled to Eastern Europe right after the Berlin Wall collapsed.
Wow.
And took pictures and traveled alone throughout seven Eastern European countries.
Wow.
So from there, I became a freelance journalist and then moved on to broadcast television journalist. And I was an anchor and a reporter for NHK's morning program.
Mm-hmm. It's like a BBC, a Japanese version.
Yes, NHK is like a, public TV.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Wow. And then I moved on to so I did that for like a few years, and then I moved to behind the camera and producing news and also TV documentaries.
And, yeah. So experience kind of culminated at the right place and the right time. Okay, so so you also made a fantastic movie called Herb and Dorothy. I truly enjoyed it and loved it. So for listeners who have not watched it, could you tell us about what the movie is about?
Yes, it's a story about a unique art collector couple, Herb and Dorothy Vogel. Dorothy was a librarian and Herb was a postal clerk. They live in one-bedroom apartment in New York City, Upper East Side. They started collecting a contemporary work of art from early 60s, right after they got married. They didn't have money and they did not have space, so they have two rules, just to buy something that they can afford and that has to be fit into their small apartment. So, but they had a really good eye, so they collected young, unknown artists, but all this, many artists became world famous, very successful artists. So their collection grew to thousands and thousands of pieces, and they just climbed into their one bedroom apartment. But the collection became really valuable and world famous. They could be a millionaire if they sold a few pieces, but they never did. And they gave everything away to the National Gallery of Art, and they, you know, actually Herb passed away 4 years ago, but they never really had a sort of affluent life, very humble life with their civil servants' pension.
So the pure spirit of patrons.
Yes, they were pure art, a patron of the art.
Right. Not so, lately it started to be more like a subject of investment, but it's really a good reminder.
Totally, yes. I was very shocked to hear the story. I couldn't believe that was a true story.
Right. Okay, so, but, you know, as a filmmaker, why did you decide to make Herb and Dorothy?
Well, I, you know, to be a filmmaker was never my goal, life goal. I never went to film school. I never been a film buff, so-called. But I was just totally touched by their life story. I couldn't believe that was a true story. And I was so desperate to let the world know about them. And I didn't know how. That could be maybe the magazine articles or television program or news feature story. I didn't know, but it just ended up be a documentary, feature documentary film.
So that's, you are the genuine version filmmaker. That's the spirit.
That made me, I guess, yes, filmmaker.
Right. Okay, so so now let's talk about your new documentary film called A Whale of a Tale, or in Japanese, Okuchera-sama, that's no seigi no monogatari. I really like the Japanese title.
Thank you.
Right, so the two justice stories. So. So which was initially released at the Busan International Film Festival in Korea in October last year, and will be shown to the public this fall.
Yes, we have a big theatrical release in Japan starting in Tokyo September 9th.
So hopefully it's going to be available here.
I hope so. I'm working on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, so what is the theme of the film?
Well, it's, let me see. It takes place in the village called Taiji in the southern Japan that was denounced by the Oscar-winning film The Cove. And ever since The Cove won the Academy Award, the international activists from all over the world, they just flocked into this tiny little fishing village.
Right, so this is the fact that The Cove was the the Taiji is in Wakayama Prefecture. It's a southern part. Mm-hmm. And then people saw in the film, it's abuse of dolphins or, small version whales. Yes. Mm-hmm. With fishermen, the poisoning of waters. And although the hunting practice was a key economic activity for years and years in Taiji. So, so that's the movie.
Right. Exactly. And ever since, because of the really visually shocking scene of dolphins slaughtered by spears and all the ocean turned into red with the blood, and that was a pretty shocking film. Mm-hmm. And it's a very well-told story, but many factual things are wrong, and I felt the filmmakers did not have enough information or knowledge or understanding of the culture and what's behind it, why they're doing it.
Right.
And because the town of Taiji has an extremely long history of whaling. It's almost 400 years. And the place is located southern tip of Kii Peninsula. Mm. So it's in the middle of nowhere, very far place, even still now, today.
Right. And I heard they don't have any other agricultural resources.
Right, they couldn't grow any food. But they happened to be, it was a passageway for whales and dolphins. So their ancestors bravely went out to the ocean, and they are the first Japanese to invent the way to catch alive whales, the big whales, and then make it as a business. Until then, they were probably eating whales and dolphins accidentally, I think washed up on the shore.
Right.
Japanese have been eating whales and dolphins, it said, over 8,000 years.
But think of it, it's killing whale, it could be giant, a monster. That's
it's
a
huge.
Brave act.
Yeah. There is actually a life-size replica in a museum of Taiji, and it's just unbelievable how big the animal is and how these, their ancestors with no modern technology, they just went out with a boat with hundreds of men, sometimes I think more than 300 men from the village, and every single person in the town, in the village, were involved in some part of the whaling, whether it's processing or selling or whatever. But anyway, so this history, the town has an extremely rich, long history of whaling that includes catching dolphins as well. So, those whalers never questioned about inheriting what their father, grandfather, great-grandfather was doing. But one day when they woke up, that whaling is no good anymore.
Right.
It's based on the global standard. It's a wrong thing to do.
I mean, historically, though, that they really couldn't survive the starvation, literally, right? So that's the history probably wasn't describing the code.
Right. And there's a saying that one catch of a whale could nourish seven communities.
Wow.
So that means it was a very big sort of life that could give to the people. And they're so thankful to the animal that, the animal's whale's life is given in sacrifice for the human beings to survive.
Right.
So there's not just food. It's about there are many different kinds of cultures, dancing, singing, spirituality.
Well, speaking of that, not wasting anything.
Right.
I think we really represent, from fat to tongue to everything is eaten.
Eaten or used for the craft, artifact.
So I think it really reflects the Japanese food culture.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always and gratitude.
Right.
Because you kill, you are responsible for the
sacrifice. Yeah.
Right. Okay. And I really thought the movie is really neutral. You try to capture both sides, and then the key person is a Jay Alabaster.
Right.
So he's just a very interesting personality. So maybe you can tell us who he is.
Okay. Jay Alabaster is an American journalist. He used to work for AP, Associated Press, and when the Cove right before, I think, the Cove won the Academy Award, he was sent to Taiji to do the story.
Mm, he was already living in Japan, right?
In Japan, yes. He lived in Japan, I think, almost 20 years.
Mm.
And he speaks fluent Japanese.
Mm, and, very fluent.
Very fluent, yes. He speaks and read and write, and he can do everything. He's more Japanese than I am, I guess. So, I met him in 2014, and I didn't know he quit AP and moved into Taiji because he was very intrigued by the history and sort of all the controversy surrounding Taiji. Mm-hmm. So he wanted to learn more about it. So he decided to quit the job and then moved into Taiji, and he was trying to understand the culture as well as history. So I knew I wanted him to be a part of the film and I wanted to interview him, but I didn't know how important role he would be. But I didn't want to make the story of his story because this is a story of Taiji and story of whalers. So, but eventually he became sort of like a guide of that story. And in a way, he reflects my voice. He's like my counterpart because I am Japanese and living in the States for a long time. And he's the opposite. He's American and lives in Japan for a long time. So we sort of share the same, a lot of, you know, we share a lot of views and opinions about this matter.
Right. And yeah, also very global views to share.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. And, I mean, if the cover was about animal rights, the theme of the whale of a tale seems not that simple. So what do you think? I mean, you and Jay probably had the core issues to feature in the movie, right?
Right. There are several things that we share the opinions about, you know, the issues surrounding this controversy. One is the problem with Japan's way of communicating with the international world community, because somehow Japan is not good at expressing themselves in the world.
Right.
They would rather just keep themselves, like, keep quiet and don't say anything. So I think that's very wrong, because Japan has accountability, because the rest of the world are really angry about this issue. But they haven't come forward and explain why they do it. Only thing they say is this is Japan's tradition and culture. But it's not convincing. They really have to come up with better, I think, explanation to that.
That's interesting, because I think in America, people are expecting to express, right? Towards you, towards yourself.
Right.
And it's, I think in the educational system, it really encourages you to say something, even if you don't have any specific idea. And in Japan, you asked, but you kind of stay quiet, not expressing too much.
I mean, people don't really like people who are expressing themselves too much.
Right.
And they expect you to be more reserved and be quiet, not too, like, forthcoming too much.
Right.
That's the culture. I mean, I think it works in the Japanese society, but it doesn't work, I think, in the global world, today's world.
And also maybe Japan closed the country like 200 years and then just we are divided. It's okay not to be interrupted by anybody else.
I think the basic problem is just English. I think that's like a very simple, basic problem, that people don't speak good enough English so that they can't communicate, you know, with the outside of Japan.
That's crazy, right? The education is pretty good. They know a lot of words, but
exactly,
they don't know how to speak. So
I think it's a mental thing. They have a knowledge, but something is stopping them because they don't want to make mistakes. They want to speak a perfect English, which is totally impossible. And it's not about the correct grammar or correct. It's not about the correctness, I don't think.
Right.
But it's about the willingness to communicate with the other people, with the world. But they don't see that way.
Right.
So unfortunately, they still have a problem.
So maybe this film is going to send out the message of you have to express yourself properly.
I think, yes, my message, I think this film's message, important message, is the about the communication and having a dialogue. And open-minded to the other side of the issues, you know. I think we always need to listen to the others and then never ever assume that you're the only right person.
Mm-hmm.
Because that could and impose your idea to the rest of the world. I think that could cause conflict and can lead to the war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. It's interesting that you say that because towards, you know, as long as I keep watching closely what people are thinking, and now Japanese community inside has diverse opinions.
Exactly. Right. Even like, yeah, like Japanese, even the same Japanese people grew up in the same town or community, they all have a different ideas.
Mm. Right. So speaking of in the film, there are scenes from the annual whale festival and where people celebrate food made with whale. But at the same time, there is a memorial ceremony for whales, and it seems that local community was so grateful for, like you said, you know, for the deaths of whales,
right,
and supporting their life and economy.
Right.
So what is the mentality of the local people? Like, you know, you can see it from the film, but, you know, does nowadays, there is a mentality. It's been this way. But are they changing or, you know, well...
I think people are very tired of dealing with this controversy and the media attention from all over the world.
Right.
It's a small, quiet town, very tight-knit community. They just want to be left alone, I think.
Mm.
But I guess this issue, I think, grew beyond the town of Taiji. It's the matter of Japan. Mm. And especially, it's not about whaling itself, but it's a animal rights issues,
right,
which is becoming more and more active.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Japan needs to express themselves and explain themselves why they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And right. Otherwise, I think they are going to be in a very difficult position.
Mm, right. Mm, so that really kind of makes me think. So the COP to me was very... kind of aggressive and almost scary.
Extremely, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, there is an effect to wake people up. What's right. wrong, what's right. But at the same time, you know, do you have right to say it?
Mm-hmm.
So what's the respect to other people's lives?
Right. Right.
So it's like a never-ending conversation. But one thing I really thought it interesting was that one of the foreign activists put out a sign out in the ocean. And that could trigger the anger of the fishermen. So the Japanese animal rights activist in the village scolded the foreign activist, saying, the sign is not illegal, but Japan is a country of manner. So in judo and kendo, we always bow. At the end of a fight, we bow. So that's the manner. So you have to keep the manner here, too.
Yes, that's a local policeman said okay. that to the activist.
Ah,
yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, it was a very interesting piece.
Yeah.
And really shows the kind of local culture.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay, anyway, so let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll talk about the biggest challenge Megumi faced in making the film. So please stay with us.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Whole Foods Market believes in seeking out local, fresh, and seasonal food and in supporting local farmers, makers, and the community as a whole, economically and agriculturally. Whole Foods Market believes in food that is vivid and colorful, fresh and full of nutrients, food that connects you to your body, the seasons, and to nature, food that helps you do more, sleep better, and wake up happier. Found in over 400 locations throughout the United States, Whole Foods Market only sells food that meets their standards, which means no artificial colors, flavors, preservatives, or sweeteners, ever. Whole Foods Market believes in real food. Visit wholefoodsmarket.com or download the Whole Foods Market app to learn more.
So welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats, broadcasting live from a studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, and my guest today is Megumi Sasaki, who is a filmmaker and director of the new... thought-provoking movie, A Whale of a Tale. So what was the biggest challenge in making the film for you?
I was very careful to keep a good balance and not to make anybody look bad.
Mm.
Because there's so much hate and darkness in the issue of whaling and dolphin hunting. And I just did not want to trigger that one more hate
right.
from the movie. I just wanted to show hope, and there could be a way that we can compromise and understand each other instead of like, you know, hating each other.
Right.
But it's a very difficult thing. Like, I try not to use the word neutral because it's a very tricky word, because nothing can be purely neutral because, you know, every person has a different idea, different perspectives. So depending on where you stand, the neutral point really changes. So I always want to say just keep a healthy, good balance.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it's such an emotional element.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. We're discussing throughout. So, and you said the message you wanted to send out from the movie was the communication.
Right.
So do you think you achieved some kind of communication between the two parties, or, you know, the Bhuman people?
I don't think communication has started yet, but I think people started realizing there's always another side of the issues.
Right.
And especially in the United States, you know, we always hear both sides of the arguments in any kinds of issues, whether it's abortions and or gun rights or, you know, LGBT matter, anything, any issues we hear the both sides of the argument, except this whaling issues or dolphin hunting issues or animal rights issues. We just hear only one side.
Right.
So I think it's very important that we provide factual information, not false, you know, news, but truth, I mean, the fact.
Right.
And then and everybody should have an opportunity to look at the issues from many different, you know, aspects.
Right.
So make speaking up before of, you make up the mind.
Right. So those aspects, for instance, you know, even majority of Japanese people never eaten whale. But, you know, some may argue that Japanese whale hunting does go back to, I heard it's like 8th century.
Right.
And also after World War II, it was General Douglas MacArthur who initiated to use whale meat as a main source of protein because Japan was so poor. And he also tried to turn the military tankers to whaling ships. So that's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And another argument would be like, why whale only, right? Because you say whales are smart that you should not kill them. So are pigs. Pigs are very smart.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this kind of like global modern world conversation, how do you think we can actually communicate outside, you know, if you watch this film, and what's the starting point?
I think just to start the conversation with your friends about it. And we just had a New York, North American premiere at Japan Cuts a couple of weeks ago. And people were just so passionately responded to it. And they all say, wow, I never knew anything about these issues. And I never thought about that in this way and that
way. Well, let's
way.
Talk about that. So because that was a North American premiere, Whale of a Tale. That was Japan Society. That's a Japan Cuts.
Right.
Program. Mm-hmm. And it was July 15th. So how many people gathered to see?
I think it was almost close to full house.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's like 150 people.
No, I think it was over 200.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. So what kind of reactions, comments did you get?
Oh, they were, some people said that, well, the same things happened to the coal mining town. So do you want to, you know, think about doing a next story for the coal mining town? It's like, I don't think so, but I'll think about it. Or do you want to do the follow-up piece? On this story, it's like, no, I spent more than 6 years to make this story, so I'm totally done with it. And there are a couple of like animal rights activists there, and they sort of wanted to give me a hard question and hard time, mentioning that this is all based on emotions, but there's no factual, I mean, a science in it. And that was one of the audience was a scientist, and she was pretty emotionally expressing that. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But and also she was very frustrated that I never included the facts that how dolphins are smart. And so my answer is, I never thought that was necessary because there are tons of documentaries and TV programs, tons of information about how dolphins are smart.
Mm.
So do I really need to say that again here, or do I need to prove it here? I don't think so.
Mm.
But what's lacking is that the acknowledgement that this animal rights issue, especially surrounding dolphins and whales, are based on a lot of emotions. Whoever can move human emotions can move the world.
Right.
So science, facts have been always ignored. So that's where we are.
Right.
So I wanted to focus on the human story and human emotions.
Well, it's a social science as well, which triggers scientific analysis as well.
Right, exactly. The science meaning, like, for example, like very simple scientific facts that whales and dolphins, the species, number of species of whales and dolphins are more than 80.
Mm.
80 different kinds of whales and dolphins are out there. There are some, you know, whales are endangered species, but many of them have never been endangered.
Mm.
They are considered to be abundant.
Right.
So these simple numbers, we don't even know. Mm. I didn't even know that. And whales and dolphins are the same cetacean groups, the same kind of animals. Those things that we don't know. And how do you define the intelligence and smartness of the animals? Who decides that?
Right. And so what's the cutting line?
I think, I think basically when we say smart animals, meaning that animals that can behave like humans.
Mm.
So it's all centered by the human beings. But there are so many animals, they're so smart. They can do so many things that human beings cannot do.
Mm.
But they're not considered smart. Like birds can fly, you know, globally without GPS on the same route every year. I think that's pretty smart.
Mm-hmm.
But people don't really think so deeply about the intelligence of it.
Mm. And also for the Buddhism idea, you know, life, it has the same way.
Mm-hmm.
So you may be mosquito and you can be easily killed, but the next life can be human being.
Exactly.
And you're killed, then somebody's going to be punished for that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also I think I heard that the audience laughed at the comments in the movie by the activists. You can kill domestic animal humanely, but there's no humane way to kill dolphins or whale.
People are like so cynically laughing at it. And I never really expected that I'd get the film would get a laugh in that section. But that's kind of interesting. That's why I love New Yorkers. You know, I love to show the film in New York because New York audience is pretty smart.
Sensitive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because we are always constantly asked about different sides of the stories.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And also, I heard that there's audience applauded when the member of the Sea Shepherd asked the mayor of Taiji, is there any way to help you for the future of Taiji? And the mayor responded that we decided what to do with our town, and there's nothing to do for you to deal with.
Right, only the residents of Taiji can decide, and you should just register as resident, and then you can say something.
Right. So, you know, like, again, but if you are very keen to protect animals of certain types or whatever, it's just very thought-provoking.
Yes.
Right. I think that's the whole point of this is a film.
Mm-hmm.
And so where can we watch Whale Tale?
Well, that's a good question. I've been working with the global distributors and educational distributors to see how we can deliver this film, how we can show this film to the audience in this country or in Europe.
Right.
But we haven't decided yet. We had a very difficult time to show this in a festival. No festival wanted to take it except Japan Cuts. And one of the festivals invited us, and then at the last moment, they canceled the invitation.
Because it's too sensitive?
They were very considered, and they were very nervous that they did not want to upset the coal filmmakers, I guess.
Right, and bring in all those activists to demonstrate outside, something like that. Okay, but, well, luckily, in this modern life, we have YouTube for, it's like word of mouth, everybody can have access to learn.
Sure.
Right, so, okay, and then in Japan, it's going to be available in September?
September 9th, yes.
Is that different theaters?
It is going to start from Tokyo.
Okay.
And then we already have several bookings in Japan, outside of Tokyo as well.
Yeah. Great. Okay. And I heard that the book version of the film is coming out too.
Yes.
So could you tell us about it?
Yes, I just finished writing a book, all the background and historical background, also spiritual, religious background, why we think differently and why Japanese and the Western part of the world don't really seem to understand each other about this issue. Mm. It's based on a completely different view towards nature and animals, and then the relationship with the animals.
Mm.
So it's not about who's right or wrong. We just had a different history and religious belief, or religious or spiritual belief. Mm. So all this like information that I could not explain in the film, I wrote it down, and what happened behind the scene of the film, producing a film.
Yes. That must be very interesting.
Yes.
Right, because there's some moments like, wow, these people are really angry on both sides in the film.
Right.
So you have to be always someone in between.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there are a lot of behind the scenes.
Yes. Convincing whalers and to get us on the boat to shoot and that kind of stuff, yeah.
But were they open to be filmed?
Well, there were a few phases of that. The first, they were open, and then they shut down.
Mm.
So I had to reopen it again, and they had to.
What happened?
Them.
They.
Well, I think. I started filming in 2010, and in 2011, they had tsunami disaster.
Mm.
So we had to stop, and then I moved on to another movie, and I came back in 2014. By the time I came back, the door was totally closed again. They didn't want anybody. They did not want any media to do anything on them. So they shut out everybody.
Mm.
I had to talk to them, and I had to go to different channels to convince the whalers. And yeah. Mm.
So to convince them, you said you need to communicate.
Communicate.
So just to send a clear message out.
Many drinkings, yes, as well.
Right.
Eating dolphin sashimi.
Wow.
And yeah.
But actually, I had a couple years ago, I had a dolphin, that was a whale sashimi. And it was pretty chewy. And it's not really like, you know, A5, A4 steak kind of thing.
Right, right. I think that depends on the kind of whales and also which part of whales or dolphins that you eat.
Right.
It tastes very different.
Okay.
Yeah. Did you grow up eating whale meat at school lunch?
No. I remember that there is a can, and it's like a big. Actually, really, I like the design, and I kept the can for a long time.
Okay.
And it's like a colorful and a big whale picture and a historic hunting scene.
Right.
But it's like Japanese traditional painting. Okay.
Right.
And I still remember. I think they still be produced. But that's as much as I experienced whale.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I really didn't know actually dolphin was eaten up until this movie.
Exactly, yeah. My mother even opposed to that idea. I told her that I'm making a movie about, you know, this town who hunts dolphins and whales, and they eat a lot of dolphins. And then my mom was like so upset about the idea, saying, "Oh no, you never eat dolphins. You're kidding?" Like, yeah, even like Japanese, a lot of Japanese have conflict idea about the dolphin hunting.
Well, it's interesting. Like sometimes in China, people eat dogs, or you know, some countries they eat horses, and it's based on food chain that time.
Right, what's availability, what's available, and like, yeah.
Right, so maybe history is not an excuse anymore because all food is available, mm-hmm. and it's not a delicacy anyways.
It's not a delicacy, but I think, yes, I was pretty shocked to see the visuals of dog meat, how dogs are cooked. And have you seen it?
No.
Oh, you should go and check. And right there, I totally understood how activists are feeling about dolphins and whales. Because in the town Yulin, it's called Yulin, Y-U-L-I-N, in southern China, they have a dog meat festival in June. So the same thing is happening there, like Taiji. The foreign activists, animal rights people go there and oppose. So, you know, try to stop them from eating dogs. And you see all kinds of dogs, like, clumped into this, like, little box.
Right.
And some have this color. And they were kidnapped from just somebody's house.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it's just heartbreaking. It's really, really heartbreaking.
Right. So because we don't see dogs not as a food item, but friends.
Right.
So that's the perception.
Exactly, yeah. Right.
But that's interesting that nowadays we share any kinds of food and things are available. So that may be one way to look at what's actually going on. But at the same time, though, I went to humanely managed chicken house. But, you know, it's eventually, how do you know chicken is not suffering?
Right, exactly.
It's minimized, and I saw, I'm sure it's like knocked down, and then they don't probably even know they're dying.
Right.
But we are eating them.
We are eating them. And also, it's not just about food. Everything that we use, the cosmetics, shampoos, medicines, you know, for flu, or whatever, it's all tested on animals.
Right.
So even if you're a vegan and say that, you know, hey, I don't eat, you know, meat and fish, but still we can never avoid, you know, sacrificing, killing animals or life forms.
Right.
That's something that we really have to be aware of. And also in the United States and also Japan, there are tremendous amount of food waste.
Right.
It's not just killing animals, but those animals are killed for waste.
Just for a piece of filet and leftover, that's all thrown away.
Or not even. They're not even like processed or cooked. Even like in Japan, it's said that one third of the food produced go to waste. So I think, you know, in Japanese saying of itadakimasu, like it's like bon appétit. And saying that, hey, Japanese never ate, you know, wasted any parts of the whales. Yeah, right. But, you know, what are we doing today? We are wasting so much food.
Right.
And on the other hand, on the other side of the world, people are still starving.
Right.
So there's a tremendous imbalance here. And then what I wanted to say is, yes, the issues of dolphins and whales, it's important. But I think the goal should be the same for all of us to protect this, you know, world and then the environment and, you know, healthy marine resources, eliminate this waste and waste of plastics in the ocean and among hundreds and hundreds of, like, issues that we have here. So I don't think we have time to, like, you know, hate each other. We should look at the same goal instead of, like, looking at the differences.
Right. As much as global warming, the kind of very universal common issue.
Right.
Right. So there's so much food for thought in this movie. So thank you for making this.
Thank you.
Right. So where can we find you online?
Well, I'm on Facebook. So I think it's Megumi Sasaki NYC. Facebook, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. And for the movie, I think we have a whaleofatale.com movie.
A whaleofatale movie.com. Yes.
It's a very basic, actually, website. We haven't really worked on it yet. But yes, you can find us here.
Okay. Okay. So listen, it's awhaleofatale.com. That's one word. Great. All right. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Truly enjoyed talking to you.
So hopefully I'll keep up please keep us posted and you can come back.
Okay.
For next project. Maybe sure. Coal mining, I don't know. Right. So, listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for guests or topics of the show, please contact us at japanneeds@heritageradionetwork.org or kikokatema.com. And Japan Needs is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays and always available at heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes and Stitcher's podcasts. And please go to iTunes and Stitcher and write a review, and we will really appreciate your feedback. And today's show, the engineer is David Dasiore, and thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.